This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
The Supreme Court decides on de-balloting Trump. Who started the Texas wildfires? And the people of France have a new right. The Monica Perez Show starts now. And if you hate commercials as much as I do, now is the time to subscribe to the Monica Perez Show premium feed on iTunes. It's just $5 a month. Or you can be the first to sign up for rockfin.com/Monica Perez and support me there and get basically unlimited, uncensored content from the good folks at Rockfin. So check it out. Okay, let's hit it. First story. The Supreme Court has ruled on one of its two cases against that they're considering regarding Donald Trump. We talked about the other one last week about whether he is immune from prosecution on charges of election interference and other kind of related stuff. To that, this is also in that general topic. The question is, can California, Maine, Illinois, and other states who would like to keep Trump from being on the ballot because he's an insurrectionist? And the Supreme Court did not rule whether or not he was an insurrectionist, although I think they could have. I'll tell you why. But in the meanwhile, they said that it is not up to the states, that Congress would have to define how to enforce or employ Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, and it would definitely not be up to the states because it would be chaotic who was on the ballot and who wasn't. Now, generally speaking, I would say, so what? That's fine. Like, the states have electoral votes to give, and they can determine how they want to give it regardless. I'm a pretty strict, you know, that's just pretty strictly my opinion on that as, you know, as a pedant, you know, as somebody who just looks at rules. But now that I'm like getting less rule oriented and a little more what is reality, maybe I'll reconsider that. But in any case, they're saying that Congress has the right, not the states. And I would say, just because it comes out of the 14th Amendment, I'll read it in a second, but because it comes out of the 14th Amendment, which was genuinely, this Section 3 was there to disenfranchise the South, they certainly did not mean for the Southern states to be able to make those decisions on their own. So I would say, yes, that the original intent of that would have been to have it in the hands of Congress. I would also say, because of the disenfranchisement of the South at that time, 14th Amendment probably, I think it's arguable that it was not ratified correctly, properly. However, once you accept a rule for long enough, it becomes the rule, like a law. It becomes the law. And even if you did have it for up for revote, maybe it would, there would be too much arguing about the details, but I think the states would ratify it as it is now, or something even, I don't know, even more expansive. But let's read it. It says, 14th Amendment, no person, this is just Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, no person shall be a senator or representative in Congress, or an elector, or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States. Now, that's what I think applies to the president, any office, civil or military, under the United States, or under any state, who, having previously taken an oath, see, and when it says or any state or under any state, that shows that they're, I think that they're trying to dominate the states here. Who, having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States or as a member of any state legislature or as an executive or judicial officer, see, again, a state legislature should be able to make those decisions themselves. So this clearly is saying that states don't have that power. They're being punished. Or as an executive or judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution of the United States, shall have engaged in an insurrection or rebellion against the same or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. But Congress may, by a vote of 2/3 of each house, remove such disability. That's a lot of power. But here's my thing. Trump was charged with insurrection, with inciting insurrection in Congress. Remember, he was impeached even when he was no longer president. It was unprecedented. But he was not convicted. Now, a supermajority was required, but a unanimous vote could have been required, like in a jury trial. They consider that binding. So the House, just to refresh your memory, the House of Representatives of the 117th U.S. Congress adopted one article of impeachment against Trump of incitement of insurrection, stating that he had incited the January 6th attack of the U.S. Capitol. At the trial, 57 senators voted guilty, which was less than the two-thirds majority needed to convict Trump, and 43 senators voted not guilty, and Trump was acquitted. So I would say it doesn't matter. Congress can't make him consider him guilty of insurrection because they had the chance, and they did not. But I didn't see anybody mention that. And I actually think that this is a setup for some dramatic twist closer to the time. So if that immunity case gets to go to trial and he's found not immune, maybe Congress steps in and revisits the question of insurrection. I really think the way the elections have become so theatrical and dramatic and, you know, if you want to say conflict oriented, like that's part of it. Anyway, this says, and this is another, just drives me crazy. I'm going to mention it every time. You've probably heard it before, but I'm going to mention it again. This is a quote from today's article in the Journal on this topic. The effort to apply the provision to Trump gained wider, the provision, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, gained wider credibility last August after William Baud and Michael Paulson, two law professors respected in conservative circles, published a scholarly article arguing that Section 3 applied to Trump's actions to stop the transfer of power and that state officials could enforce the stricture without explicit authorization from Congress. Trump's actions did not, in reality, nor would they be expected to be, to interfere with, what was the exact word, to stop the transfer of power, because the events of January 6th facilitated the transfer of power, interrupted the process by which the transfer of power might have been slowed or scrutinized. It facilitated. It was done by the end of the day, which would absolutely not have happened if it weren't for those actions. So whatever, there were at least no damages, and it seems to be like there would not even be motive because it was too stupid to expect that that would have helped. Why would you stop something that was working? Yeah, so I have a feeling that there's going to be something screwy coming down the pike. Another thing is, so they keep talking about these cases. There are four cases outstanding against Trump right now. And I have observed for a while now that the worm turned. DeSantis was actually leading Trump in polls of who Republicans would vote for in the primary in 2022, in fall of 2022. And it's when all this chatter and then like the dramatic arrest and all of that stuff, it seemed to me, observing at the time, that the worm turned there and Trump just absolutely galloped ahead of DeSantis. But I pulled some stats on this just to see if my memory served. And it says that, so anyway, in the paper today, there's an article that says that the legal troubles Trump's having are making him more appealing to Republicans. But I'm telling you, I saw that unfolding in real time, just like him being mean to Democrats, them being mean to him seems to have the same effect. First round was him being, you know, saying rude things to whatever, Nancy Pelosi. Okay, so in December 2022, there was a Monmouth poll that showed DeSantis leading Trump 39-26. So December 2022. In February 2023, it was 53-40 DeSantis to Trump. But by March 21st, it was 41 Trump, 27% of the polled Republicans, I believe they were all Republicans, wanted DeSantis. So the worm turned between December, almost reversed, between December and March a year ago. So this says that on March 30th, 2023, Trump was criminally indicted on 34 felony counts of falsifying business records in tandem with an alleged catch-and-kill operation to suppress negative press during his 2016 campaign, largely revolving around the hush money payment to pornographic actress Stormy Daniels. That is ongoing. But there was a lot of chatter about that beforehand. And in December 2022, the Trump Organization two of his subsidiaries were found guilty of 17 charges, including tax fraud. So you could see the persecution emerging. And I remember people talking about it. And I just noticed that his popularity just started blowing up. So in this article, though, today, where it says like what people, how this is having a positive impact on people's desire to vote for him, here are just some of the things people were saying, not necessarily quotes, but his ability to endure these blows, these attacks, convinced people that he was a very strong candidate, like physically strong person, stronger than Biden anyway, best man for the job, even in the Republican field. Political persecution by his enemies that gave them, you know, wanted to champion him. His fighting made him seem younger and more fit. Here is a quote. A mother, an active duty member of the Air Force, said she likes how Trump talks about the strength of the military, about bringing jobs back to the U.S. and blocking China from buying land in the U.S. Outside of a Target where she was buying diapers, you know, just to set the stage, she was middle class, whatever, lower middle class. She said that Trump has been attacked and that she, I think that's middle class. I go to Target. She said that Trump has been attacked and that she likes to see him push back, calling it hilarious and ballsy. And they talk about him having, you know, a second term, which they would like to continue his work. But I think that the second term of a president does not usually continue the good work that you're electing him to continue, just in my observation. Anyway, but today is Super Tuesday. Maybe I should have led with that. It is Super Tuesday. And almost one third of the delegates of the Republican for the Republican convention will be awarded today. And Trump could clinch the nomination by a week from today, next Tuesday at the earliest, but maybe 2 weeks from then. Looks like he's on track for that. He can't clinch it today, but he could clinch it next week. Now, Nikki Haley is participating in today's primaries, but after today, she has no events booked, no ads paid for, apparently. But I don't know if I've mentioned this before. I don't think I went through this, but there's a CNN article. Now, I looked for it, but it was out just recently. It says, what happens if a candidate drops out during a primary, between the primary and the convention, between the convention and the election? And just back of the envelope stuff, it said, if a candidate drops out before the convention, so say Trump had all the delegates he needed or whatever he needed to get the nomination at the convention, but he dropped out, the delegates on the floor would likely make the decision. So then it really matters who your delegates are. And that was true. That's been true now and again, actually. That has been true now and again. I mean, I think they always have the power. They just don't realize it. And I used to, on WSB, I had two different delegates call and say one was basically punished for life, Catherine Bernard. And another guy he told me the skinny, like the pressure to vote for one over the other. I can't remember what election it was really hard to take. So it matters who your delegates are, believe it or not. And then the other thing is, if it's after the convention, for the Democrats, the DNC would make the decision after consultation with members of Congress and governors in the party, but the RNC would just pick. Now, people don't think that would be Nikki Haley because she seems to be having a weak showing. Maybe DeSantis gets it. I don't know. But I don't know what's going to happen. I'm terrible at predicting the outcome of these things. But, you know, when you read these articles and you see these threads dangling, you just got to wonder who's going to push what, you know, who's going to pull on what thread.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for craveable, hand-battered, cooked-to-order chicken fingers.
Chicken up.
Crispy crinkle-cut fries.
Hot potato coming through.
Buttery Texas toast.
Toast walking.
And secret Cane's sauce.
Topping off now.
Turbocharge your chicken fingers and get them even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app.
Go, go, go!
Raising Cane's chicken fingers. One love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
All right, so that's like the big story, and I've got some lots of quick hits today. So let's see what we've got on just one-off stories. No deep dives. Okay. Right, so there are these wildfires in Texas. Last I heard, there were six separate fires started, worst in history. And of course, it is absolutely scorching the earth of cattle country. It's awful. And of course, we know that cows are under attack, that meat is under attack, especially grass-fed cattle is like the best nutrition you can get. And it's under political attack left and right. It was under actual attack during COVID as well. So you have to be suspicious when something on the agenda is being facilitated by, you know, a worst ever tragedy. And I get further suspicious when it's a governmental or quasi-governmental entity that started it. And I noticed that in California, I was talking about this, and lo, some citizen took a video of a municipal truck that had burning trash in the back of it. It was like a garbage truck, and dumped its burning payload into dry brush on the side of the road and started a fire. But the citizen blew the whistle, and that one was stamped out. But it was during a time when there were crazy fires. I've seen myself, and I've heard people say that the fires haven't been attacked until they've spread a bit, so they don't even try to fight them. And PG&E had to pay $117 million charge for their equipment or their lines causing the fire. And I, you know, these stories are hard to sift through because then they use that as an example or as an excuse for giving us preemptive rolling blackouts, which is outrageous, in my opinion. Outrageous. For a couple of reasons. First of all, it gives them carte blanche to turn off your power anytime, and I don't trust them with that power. And when you turn off people's power, they use candles. It is not safer as a general rule to use candles instead of electricity. I find it hard to believe. Or people make outside fires, maybe. I mean, I want to see the data on that. And that folds in, of course, to the agenda of climate change and getting us off the grid and all of that. So today there was a lawsuit filed against the utility and the maintenance company, Xcel Utility, which is publicly traded. So its stock is taking a hit. But another thing that makes me suspicious is when stories reflect other stories. So Hawaii has something like that where deteriorated poles were supposedly the cause of the fire, although the utility company said we had turned off the electricity then. So you don't really know the answer. But that's what these Texas utilities being accused of. They've been asked to preserve this one pole and its condition because they're being sued by homeowners and that kind of thing. So, you know, when I see that, I don't know what the truth is, but it's just suspicious to me. I mean, there should be protocols and they should follow them. And they don't seem to have done so. And especially after Texas had that awful freeze, which was highly suspicious, in my opinion, you would think that the utilities would be worried about scrutiny and paying a little more attention to this. Who knows if it's a real story or a false story trying to cover up even more nefarious stuff. Australia had terrible wildfires, and there were many reports with evidence of arsonists, many arrests for arson. So I don't know what really happened, but it's fishy. And here's another thing that was in the news today about not following safety protocols. So Boeing, here's a quote from today's newspaper about Boeing. An audit by U.S. regulators in response to a mid-flight Alaska Air incident in January found that Boeing BA, oops, sorry, that's their ticker. That's in the Wall Street Journal article. Allegedly failed to comply with quality control requirements in manufacturing. The FAA said that its six-week audit of Boeing and Spirit AeroSystems, its manufacturing partner, was prompted by a door plug on a Boeing 737-9 MAX plane blowing out mid-flight. They found, quote, non-compliance issues in Boeing's manufacturing process control, parts handling, and storage and product control. So it says that four bolts were missing from this thing as it left the factory. And I just don't believe that for two reasons. I mean, I don't, I'm not saying I don't believe that. I don't believe it's just mistakes. Like, this all seems like a psyop, this whole reducing air traffic safety or the perception of air traffic safety, I would say, so they can either slow down air traffic or totally revamp it, especially for electric planes and all that kind of stuff, or all of the above. But there's two reasons I don't believe this. Because one, it's funny, when I was an investment banker, which I think was like between commercial investment banking, maybe like 10 years. At one point I was a generalist, so I did like random little deals, loans for random companies or whatever. And one of them was in-flight phone. And I think back, and the deal did not go through, but I learned a lot about the industry, certainly safety, like how seats, you know, it was supposed to be in the back of seats, and like that was the big problem, like how to do it, how to pay for it. The reason seats are uncomfortable is like for safety reasons, that if they made it so like you could just lay down and have fun, like it would, or sleep or whatever, there would be safety problems. So that's why airline seats aren't the most comfortable. But I was introduced at that time to the term of triple redundancy, which means that every system has two backups. Now, maybe it's less safe now. There are less redundancies now. I find that hard to believe. Another dated but very nice little way to learn about the Boeing factory in California, which I will put in the show notes, is Huellhauser's California's Gold. I don't know if anybody ever lived in California, but it's this quirky little public thing. The guy's from Tennessee, has a complete Tennessee accent, but he's very beloved. And he just goes to different people and places and exposes, you know, some fun stories in California. And one of them was at the Boeing factory. And I remember watching it thinking, like, that one person is responsible for a bolt, and that's all he or she does, like, the entire time. It's crazy. So, I mean, you can't get all of these episodes, but I found it, and I'll put it in the show notes. It'll probably get taken down soon. Because once you look at it, you're just like, holy cow, like, Boeing is buttoned up. That's for sure. So I find this difficult to believe. I'm not saying it's, you know, it's not true. I just find it difficult to believe. Okay. Speaking of airlines, there has been this attempted merger between JetBlue and Spirit Airlines for a while now, and the Department of Justice has been trying to stop it. And this has, well, they succeeded, and it's been driving me absolutely crazy because there are four huge airlines: American, Delta, United, and Southwest. And among the four of them, between the four of them, whatever, it's, depending on what you read, 70 to 80% of the air market is those four. If JetBlue and Spirit were to merge, they would make up 10% of the industry. So they would be the fifth player. So to me, that doesn't seem like they're the antitrust problem, if antitrust is ever a problem, but they don't seem like the problem to me. And it seems like if that's getting stepped on, it's the big carriers who don't want it. And I know, or I remember seeing some clips that made me believe that Delta and other big airlines were in on kind of the COVID stuff and were promised, or theoretically promised, tax breaks, or I don't know what kind of treatment, but whatever. I think they, you know, these guys are all in bed together, obviously. And it got stopped. And what's absolutely preposterous about it is that the grounds were that American consumers wouldn't have as much choice or lower prices if these guys weren't competing against each other, but were consolidated. However, both of them are having terrible financial problems. So it's quite possible that neither of them will exist. And it's also true that the prices and the competitiveness that they're delivering are not a viable business model because they're having serious financial problems and have for a while. So I think it was the DOJ, stood in the way of American Airlines partnering with JetBlue in certain regions. And I'm guessing, you know, maybe they stood in the way of the Spirit thing. You know, I don't know. But it's absolutely preposterous. The guy, the head of the Spirit Airlines, said that I think that might have been the word he used, but it was totally my idea too. And I remember when I lived in Dallas many years ago, there was a small airfield, Love Field, where JFK came in his last flight. Some people I knew, because I was a banker there, invested in what was called Legend Airlines. And it just took advantage of some regional rules or whatever. And I guess American, whoever is the hub down there, I think it was American, just made the prices that they charged absolute rock bottom, totally like impossible to cover costs, just to drive Legend out of business. And I was like, hey, I'm a free marketer. You can do stuff like that. However, that's completely anti-competitive behavior, and it should never have passed the muster, but I don't remember there ever being any compensation or, like, Legend was gone forever. So I've always been kind of sus of that airlines as an industry anyway. Okay, so it's too distracting for me to look at comments during the first half hour. Let's see, but somebody said something. There you go. That was relevant to my next story. Frightening Me says, Vicky Newland is a blood-soaked monster, good riddance. That is true, but that's more of the punchline to Angus Mustang's Victoria Newland, who stepped down. Ding dong, the witch is gone. Yes, okay. So Vicky the Noodle, as I like to call her, because... I think that would be her mob name, therefore, that's my name for her. Although she goes by Toria. That's how Anthony Blinken, Secretary of State, said goodbye to her, you know, Toria. It's totally inappropriate. You know what I mean? It's so chummy and unprofessional. How about that? Anyway, but it doesn't matter. The most important thing is that she's leaving, oh my gosh, the Russian foreign minister. Called it an admission of failed U.S. policy toward Russia, she says, because I don't know if you guys remember, I've been covering this her since 2014, because she orchestrated that coup against the democratically elected president, Yanukovych, about the gas deal and the gas and bond deal that he had struck on his people's behalf against with Russia. And then she came back and talked about how they were replacing the government of Ukraine. She did that in a recorded, which I saw, meeting with that literally on the back of the wall. It says Chevron and I think Exxon or something, you know, so she's telling the oil companies that, you know, mission accomplished, or we're close to getting the mission accomplished. We spent $5 billion U.S. tax dollars to, you know, change civil society in Ukraine. So she did it. There's a hidden audio of her telling Jeffrey Pyatt, I think it was, that this is how we're going to rearrange the government there. We're going to put Klitsch in the outside to, like, rally the Nazis. No, Klitsch doesn't rally Nazis. Tunnybrook rallies Nazis. Klitsch was going to be the mayor of Kiev on the outside, kind of calling the shots, while Yatsenyuk takes the actual president's chair, even though he will be taking orders. I mean, it's just great. And all those people did end up being in those roles. It's really, really amazing. I don't know if you guys heard that. I'll see if I can find that for the show notes, if I can remember. So she says, spokeswoman Maria Zakharova said, they won't tell you the reason, but it is simple. The failure of the anti-Russian course of the Biden administration, Russophobia proposed by Victoria Nuland as the main foreign policy concept of the United States, is dragging the Democrats to the bottom like a stone. So Vicky the Noodle and her husband, Robert Kagan, have some connection to that region. I will tell you that, okay, let me just say what her blurb is here. Nuland, a career foreign service officer who served as Assistant Secretary of State for Europe during the Obama administration, but retired after Donald Trump was elected, returned to government as Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs in the Biden administration. But she was also a security advisor, if I recall correctly, to Dick Cheney. She's got administrative roles or, like, ranking roles in Brookings Institute, the National Endowment of Democracy, which is the CIA front. Oh, okay. So her father's father, her paternal grandfather, his name was Noodleman. That's why I call her Vicky the Noodle. And he was from Bessarabia, which part of Bessarabia is in Ukraine. So let's say she's Ukrainian And her husband, Robert Kagan's extremely, extremely, let's say, influential, if not powerful. Okay, that's my 30 minutes. After this, we'll do some comments, and then I've got a couple more stories. So Robert Kagan is a high-ranking guy at Brookings Institution. He was a founder of PNAC, which did 9/11, I think, predicted that there needed to be a 9/11, and people in PNAC seemed to have orchestrated it. I don't know. Well, let's just say there's no doubt in my mind. Okay. That's all. I didn't mean to say I didn't know. Okay. So, and if you want to know about that, do look at A New Pearl Harbor by Massimo Matsuko. It's like a 5-hour documentary. It's riveting. But what I think is funny is that Robert Kagan's name, Kagan, means king in Khazarian, and Khazarian is the 13th tribe that supposedly migrated to Ukraine and Eastern Europe and had converted to Judaism and maybe are Ashkenazi. I'm not sure it's the same. I have to ask Courtney Turner. She did a whole show on that. Anyway, but his father was a Lithuanian. Anyway, his brother is the head of or is at the American Enterprise Institute. He taught at West Point. I mean, you get the picture. I'm not going to miss Vicky the Noodle. However, they're almost always replaced by somebody worse. Not that I've ever seen anyone worse than her, but okay. So let's just see if anybody's got any comments right now, and then I'll go to my last stories. Oh, hello, CFR Network. Yes, exactly. Frightening Me was all over it. I am well. Thank you so much. So, yes, the Khazarians are the ancestors of the Ashkenazi. So, in Israel, I had an Israeli friend when I was in college, and he was Sephardic. So, he looks like more like me. And because I have Syrian descent, that makes me a Semite. And that's what he really looks kind of like an Arab. He didn't care. That didn't bother him. Yeah, Angus says, when do people like Newland ever face justice for the crap they do? Well, I think if not sooner, I think St. Peter will take care of that. Okay, let's just get on with the last story. It's just a couple of quick hits. Today was a quick hit day. One thing I noticed was this was two reproductive stories on the cover of the Wall Street Journal today. One is that and of course it has to be Dublin-based, Ireland, Catholic country, Perrigo has shipped Opill to major U.S. retailers and expects it to be widely available by the end of the month. It is a birth control pill that is available without prescription. Now, why would you want that? Because it's so easy to get birth control, and if you get it on a prescription, your insurance pays for it. And everybody has insurance because of Obamacare, am I right? Or Medicare or Medicaid. Who can't access insurance for this? Probably teens who don't want to tell their parents or go to their mother's doctor. So I'm not going to judge that, but I will say that if I'm not mistaken, some birth control does cause health problems such as blood clots, and hormones are extremely powerful. I don't think there's anything more powerful in the human body than hormones. I don't think. So, for me, I could never take that stuff. That would really cuckoo. This says Opill is shown to be 98% effective at preventing pregnancy when used as directed, which is if the target audience is teens using it in secret. Now, they're not saying that's the target audience, but I'm just thinking that's going to be the people who use it, may not understand the importance of using it as directed. It would beat out other OTC, over-the-counter methods, such as condoms and spermicide. Other prescription methods that require doctors to visit, such as IUD, are more effective. Now, I used to be IUDs, which were intrauterine devices, were not given to women who had not had children. I think it must, I don't know what, I don't know the details, but they do it now. Ouch, that's all I can say. Oh, so here was another thing that is also coming down this week. This is like within a couple of weeks. Also coming within a couple of weeks is an abortion pill at the pharmacies. But that will require a prescription and apparently will not be available in places where abortion is illegal. But still, like, that's kind of grotesque if that's what people use for, you know, a birth control method. And I think people do. And anyway. So another Catholic country, France, paving the way by becoming the first country in the world to explicitly enshrine abortion rights in its constitution after French lawmakers overwhelmingly endorsed the change in a historic vote in the Palace of Versailles on Monday. It was passed 780 to 72 in a special joint session of Parliament, and it guarantees the freedom to have recourse to an abortion. And this article says that according to YouGov, 2/3 of the population are in favor of this. And I would say, I'm assuming that they made the poll skew towards maximizing approval of this. So I'm going to say maybe it was just 50-50. I don't know. Macron had pledged to make abortion an irreversible right after the U.S. Supreme Court eliminated the constitutional right to an abortion, overruling the 1973 Roe versus Wade decision. That was a quote, and I object to it. First of all, I will say that what this is saying is that the French constitutional amendment was spurred on by what happened here. And I would say our constitutional amendment is going to be spurred on by the same thing, which is overturning Roe versus Wade. But I really don't like the way the Wall Street Journal worded this. It said the Supreme Court eliminated the constitutional right to an abortion. Now, what they found, what they did was they overturned a ruling that inaccurately attributed, said that some language of the Constitution is implied and not actually written into the Constitution. And that's just not true. So what they did was, oh, they did overturn a prior decision, but I would not say that, you could not say they eliminated a constitutional right, because what they were saying is the constitutional right never existed. But I think it will, because I am afraid that this is, you know, a precursor. It says that there, the time limit on elective abortion is 14 weeks of pregnancy, which is where, I think that was basically where we, where the Supreme Court did not allow states to legislate under 15 weeks. And I think, I feel like states pushed the envelope to force a renewed ruling on Roe versus Wade, perhaps with the best intentions, but these things can backfire. Here's a quote from the French Prime Minister, Gabriel Attal. Am I so out of touch that I don't know the current Prime Minister? Because I didn't recognize that. Yes, the freedom to have an abortion remains under threat. Our rights are inherently threatened, inherently fragile. Talk to American women about it. He says his message to women is clear. Your body belongs to you, and nobody has the right to control it in your place. Although, I will say, buddy, they did have a passe sanitaire for the COVID vaccine. So a passe of sanitation, a cleanliness passe. It sounds a little fascistic. Anyway, if you wanted to actually do anything, you did not have the right to control your own body. I think that's been revoked since then. But anyway, so that is it. That is it. Long-term hormone use is terrible for you. That's true. And if I did believe in the FDA, I would say that this is something they should care about. But the FDA is captive. So what I would rather is tort law. So if you have a huge chain like CVS and they sell something that kills people, they should be liable. There should be tort law, I think. And that would solve the problem. You don't need regulations when you have a healthy tort system. Oh, yes, Love Field is a hub for Southwest. Yes, yes, yes. But yes, that's true. But it was American that, you never know if these people collude. Anyway, all righty, sweeties. Thank you so much for coming, for listening, and for commenting. And you can find me at MonicaPerezShow.com, Rockfin.com/MonicaPerezShow, at Monica Perez Show on Twitter, LinkedIn. No, not LinkedIn. Yikes. I don't like LinkedIn. Linktree under Monica Perez or Monica Perez Show. I should probably know that one. Anyway, thank you so much for coming and listening. This is Monica Perez.